I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Washington Governor Bob Ferguson just signed into law the nation's most racist illegal housing policy. Plus, a couple years after Seattle Pride publicly shamed some of its corporate sponsors for donating to Republicans, they're now complaining that they don't have enough corporate sponsors. And the White House tries to restore reasonable discipline in schools. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. If you have not signed up to support our show financially, we would sure appreciate you subscribing for just $5 a month. You support the work we do here on the show and also get access to exclusives for subscribers like our show Sundays with Subscribers. You can sign up right now at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Just click on the banner that says support the show. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here on this Thursday. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. You don't get to be a moderate and sign reparations into law. Done. Any facade Bob Ferguson had about, oh, I'm a moderate all of a sudden, I'm a fiscal conservative and all these things. No, when you sign a bill into law that gives $120,000 gifts to people based on their skin pigmentation, you don't get to be a moderate and you don't get to be a fiscal conservative. So Bob can say and do all these nice things that make him seem sane and reasonable, but this one throws everything out the window. So we have been, I think, reporting on this pretty exclusively for the past 2 years. The Covenant Home Ownership Program, as they titled it, because of course you don't want to call it reparations because the word reparations has a certain negative connotation to it and it's not a popular idea. So they called it the Covenant Home Ownership Program. And they passed it into law a couple years ago. It didn't get a lot of attention because it didn't have that word reparations in it. But then starting January 1st, 2024, if you were buying a home in the state of Washington, you, whether you knew it or not, were paying reparations. You were paying when you closed on a home and you had to pay the fees to document everything at the recorder's office. You were paying hundreds of additional dollars to go into the Covenant Home Ownership Program. So it created this pool of money for first-time home buyers who had the right skin color that they could dip into and get zero interest loans to cover closing costs and their down payment. And since then, a lot of people have used it. It's been very popular. And I gotta be honest, I would probably use it too if my skin color were correct. Because Lord knows it's incredibly difficult to save for a down payment on a home, especially in a state like Washington where home prices are so high. It takes years. It could take decades to save $100,000, $200,000, $300,000. But if your skin color is right, you don't have to save a thing. Because you can dip into the Covenant Home Ownership Program and you can get a zero interest loan that you only have to pay back once you sell the house you bought it with. So no interest, and you're going to pay it back years and years and years down the road, only when you get the profits from selling the home that it helped you to buy. So the program as it has existed for 2 years was already bad enough because it's racist. It's racist and it's illegal. And the fact that nobody has sued over it is mind-boggling to me. And I say it's racist because there is no requirement in the law that you have to prove you or your family members were discriminated against. You only have to prove that you had family members who lived here during the time of housing discrimination. So if you're, let's just say, like a black 25-year-old who's living in Washington State and your family has lived here for decades, even if your family has no proof that they were ever discriminated against in housing, you get to benefit from it. Other home buyers have to pay for your down payment. So the program was already bad enough. So what did Bob Ferguson sign? Because that program has already been law. Well, he signed changes to the Covenant Home Ownership Program in House Bill 1696. And these changes do a couple things. But one of the primary things that the changes do is it says those loans aren't loans anymore. Now, for a certain segment of first-time home buyers who benefit from this program and got the zero interest loan, which averaged $120,000 a loan, After 5 years of living in the house, you no longer have to pay it back. Here's Bob Ferguson, the moderate fiscal hawk, signing that bill into law.
Washington State's Covenant Homeownership Program provides down payment and closing cost assistance for lower-income, first-time homebuyers. Lawmakers created the program to address the disproportionate impacts of racial redlining in Washington State. House Bill 1696 modifies the program by adjusting the area median income threshold for program eligibility, introducing loan forgiveness, and modifying the Oversight Committee membership. This modification will create more opportunities to close the racial homeownership gap, which is a very important goal for all of us here in Washington State. We so appreciate everybody who made this legislation possible. We know it's been, like any legislation, challenging.
Yes.
This one has its share of challenges, as we know.
Yes.
But Representative Taylor has been a real champion of this legislation, and so we appreciate your leadership in particular. Thank you very much. And with that, I'm pleased to sign this legislation into law. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So you hear him there praise the leadership of the bill's prime sponsor, Representative Jamila Taylor. And I thought, gosh, what leadership is that? Is this the leadership he's praising?
Maybe they might want to call me a monkey today because I want to participate in our inclusive economy. This is getting ridiculous.
Yeah, that's the brand of leadership that Representative Jamila Taylor displayed on the floor when she was trying to guilt Republicans into voting for this bill. Republicans didn't support it. They made a bunch of really sound arguments against it. And honestly, they didn't even pull out the "it's racist and illegal" argument. They talked about how this wasn't a good program that was sustainable, and they believe that Democrats down the road are just going to have to fund it with general fund dollars. We'll get into that in a moment. So they stuck pretty firmly to fiscal arguments on the bill, not fairness arguments. And she completely out of nowhere said, well, I guess they might want to call me a monkey because I want to participate in our, you know, state's economy. Is that the leadership, Bob? Is that leadership? What is Bob Ferguson talking about? Thank you, Representative Taylor, for your leadership. All she did was make this about race, racism, and call anyone who doesn't support reparations racist who might want to call her a monkey. And we're celebrating her for that? It's wild. So as I said, the bill is insane. So for people who meet the income threshold, a certain level of the poverty line, who utilize this program, after they live in the house for 5 years, that loan goes away. So it's a gift. So it's the government forcing other home buyers to pay the down payments for homebuyers of color. Blatantly illegal. Blatantly unconstitutional. I would also say that someone, in particular, a Jewish homebuyer, should be the one to sue over this. Why? So as you said there, and as Bob Ferguson said, this is about righting, you know, historical wrongs of housing discrimination. And yes, there was housing discrimination. There was redlining. There were groups of people in this state and in this country who, because of the color of their skin, were discriminated against. And I've said before that if you're making specific individuals whole again, who had specific instances where they were robbed of home ownership or land or whatever it is, then they have a case against the government. That's different to me. That's much different than this broad sense of reparations. Let's make people who didn't do anything wrong pay for other people's shit. So the reason I say a Jewish person who is buying a home in Washington State should sue over this is, you know what other group of people besides Black people were discriminated against in housing in this state? Jewish people. You know who is explicitly left off and left out of the Covenant Home Ownership Program? Jewish people. So this is strictly about race, racism, about a misguided way of making up for and virtue signaling about wrongs of the past in a way that should be easy to defeat in court. But also it's going to have profound fiscal consequences, because here's what's going to happen. And Republicans warned about this. This was one of their key arguments against it, because again, they didn't want to get into the, like, This is just racist argument, because then people like Jamila Taylor will say, oh, next thing I know, you're going to call me a monkey. So what Republicans said is the program as it has existed so far. So it's got a fund that, how does it replenish itself, right? So people who buy a home pay, you know, $500 to $1,000 in recorder's fees, added recorder's fees that go into the Covenant Home Ownership Program fund. And then as people who benefit from that fund sell those homes eventually, they have to repay the loan, and then it continues to replenish the fund. The issue is, of course, the program was wildly popular in its first year, and the fund is basically depleted. So what happens when now you say the loans are forgivable after 5 years? You don't have that money coming back into that fund. So when the fund runs dry, because so many people want to utilize it, what are you going to do? Well, you're not just going to cancel the program. They love that, you know, you love the program. Democrats love this, virtue signaling at its finest. They're not just going to say, well, money's run out, I guess you're out of luck. No, they're going to find a different way to fund it. How are they going to fund it? They're going to take money out of the general fund. They're going to appropriate money in other ways. They're going to increase taxes to pay for reparations. And that's a no-brainer. If the fund is already low now, when you make the loans forgivable, the fund is going to be bone dry really, really quick. So there is a racism argument about this. And then there's a very obvious fiscal argument. And you've got Bob Ferguson, I'm a moderate, I'm a fiscal hawk, signing the thing. And we had asked his office 3 days ago, because we saw this had gone to his desk like the 17th of April or maybe the 15th of April. And Nicole had emailed his office, is Bob Ferguson going to sign the reparations bill? And they still haven't returned. I mean, obviously, we know now he signed it, but they never responded to our email, probably because they know that it's terrible. And it's like, oh, well, nobody's going to watch him signing this on TVW. And maybe if we don't put statements out, no one's going to, you know, he gets the credit for it with the far left, but then nobody's going to talk about it. Of course, we're going to talk about it. This is about as insane as it gets. So you don't get to, and I knew, and we knew, and there, I've said nice things about Bob Ferguson this session because he's said some good things about fiscal restraint and budgeting. But when you sign something like this, all of that goes out the window. And then if he signs rent control, that's just going to be the cherry on top of the far left-wing pie. So this is nut stuff. Somebody needs to sue over it. So if you are someone who's looking to buy a home in Washington State, or actively trying to buy a home in Washington State, and you're interested in being the person, because you have to have somebody with standing who puts the lawsuit forth, I am sure that we could find an organization that would be willing to handle your case pro bono. And honestly, wouldn't bother me one bit if you get a $10 million payday from the state of Washington, even if it comes from the taxpayers, to prove a point on this bill. Insane stuff. And I also just continue to be offended by the notion that white people must not need any financial help. You know, you have white people in this country who don't benefit from generational wealth. It's like this idea that, and it's kind of racist from Democrats, honestly, black people can't do anything on their own and they can't save money on their own, so we have to step in and help them. It's just insane stuff. I don't even know what to do with that. I saw that this morning. I was like, he signed it. I told Nicole this, what he was going to do is not sign it, but not veto it. So if he doesn't sign it, but he doesn't veto it, eventually it just becomes law. And I thought that's probably what he'll do, because it's such a blatantly illegal bill. He probably doesn't want his name on it. But no, he's proud, want to, you know, prop up the left wing of his base. Just insane stuff. All right, speaking of insane stuff, so while all that's going on and they're dishing your money out and forcing you to pay for other people's down payments for their homes, Taxapalooza continues in Olympia. We've got new ones added to the list, it seems like, every single second as the legislative session winds down. I mean, we've got increases in the B&O tax to the tune of $5 billion for businesses, property tax increases, gas tax increases, sales tax increases, even increases in the cost of you dying, reparations, of course, that's an increase, capital gains tax increase, a wealth tax proposal that they're pushing through to try to see if it'll withstand a court challenge, excise taxes, precious metals tax, Zinn tax, sporting events fees, Tesla tax, Discovery Pass fees going up, glass bottle fee, craft beer tax, hunting and fishing fees, firearm permit fees, and I didn't even fit all of them on there. Mm-hmm. I didn't even fit all of them on there. So it's just insane. And again, you have Bob Ferguson preaching fiscal restraint, but at this point, if they're passing these things, they know that he's going to sign it. And so we're looking at billions and billions of new taxes. House Republican leader Drew Stokesbury slammed what the Democrats are doing, mostly behind closed doors.
Democrats have engaged in the most reckless taxing spree one could possibly imagine. And I mean that both substantively and procedurally. Substantively, they are taxing the jobs out of Washington. They are passing along giant tax increases to businesses whose presence in Washington state has allowed Washington to become a leader in the nation in terms of K-12 funding, higher ed funding, healthcare funding. Washington state is able to provide an abundant level of services to its vulnerable people because companies like Amazon and Microsoft and Boeing and Starbucks have decided to call Washington home. Procedurally, it is the worst way imaginable to craft tax policy. Tax policy should be well thought out. It should be fair, uniform, predictable, treat taxpayers evenly, allow businesses to plan. That is not what is happening. We are having, after spending all session talking about, going back before session when Senator Frame accidentally emailed her tax plan to the entire world, we spent all session talking about certain taxes, and then in the last week, Democrats said, forget about those ones, here's a brand new set of taxes nobody has looked at. This is the worst possible way to do tax policy. The public deserves so much better than what they're getting from legislative Democrats right now. It is an impossible situation that is entirely the choice / mismanagement of House Democratic leadership. And Washingtonians should be pretty disgusted. And unfortunately, if House Democrats are successful, they'll have to be disgusted through an economy in shambles. They're cutting things they don't need to cut so they can have an excuse to raise taxes on people they don't like. Even though the taxes that they're passing, they don't actually know who is going to be taxed or how much because they're changing them on the fly at the last minute with absolutely no sunlight.
Yeah, and by design. I think we've all agreed at this point that this has to be by design. You had 4 months of a legislative session. It's the longer session that they have. And you waited to push all of this through until the last minute. And now I almost think that it was by design with Bob Ferguson, too, that they all agreed amongst each other that Governor Ferguson was going to push back a little bit, you know, give him the old razzle-dazzle to buy him time. And then at the end, they were going to push it all through, sign it at the last minute on Sunday, and then say, see you later, and go back to their day jobs. And screw all of us over in the process when they don't need any more money. Because what are they paying for? Come on, you know it by now. Laser hair removal for transgender prison inmates. As one example of the many, many things that your hard-earned money is going to fund that the government has no business funding. And then Democrats cry the entirety of the session that all these really important things like education and roadways and public safety and all of this is suffering because we don't have enough money while they fund all these ideologically driven pet projects and programs like reparations. They didn't need any more money. They didn't need any more taxes. They just had to take a long look in the mirror at who they have a responsibility to and what they have a responsibility to do with your tax money. And that's to be good stewards of it. But voters in this state don't demand it. The majority of voters in this state continue to put the same people back in office who have raised their taxes so much over the last 20 years. And so at the end of the day, what do you do about it? If the majority of voters want it, this is the system we have, and they want to keep sending those people back to Olympia because Orange Man Bad or whatever has gotten them all spun up, then I guess our choice is to either live with it, continue to fight back, or move away. Absolutely insane. You heard him there talk about that the Democrats are pushing through all these new taxes while cutting spending for things that they don't need to cut spending for. So their priorities are all over the place. And I think that was a good point by Drew Stokesbury. Nicole, I want to skip ahead real quick. I'll come back to the gun story that we have. But one of the things that Republicans have begged Democrats to continue to fund are these schools, is the reference, I guess. Basically, these homes for developmentally delayed adults. people who are adults and are wards of the state who don't have a family that they can live with or someone who can take care of them. So they're basically left in the care of the state. And, you know, Democrats, I don't know their rationale for wanting to cut funding for these schools and close them down. I think it's because you have this segment of the far left that calls these institutions. And, oh, we don't want people institutionalized, even though you had family members of these vulnerable adults who are in these facilities who said that these are basically the only things keeping them alive. You'll recall a couple weeks ago on the show, Representative Travis Couture, we played this clip. He had been in a hearing, a committee hearing, where Democrats were talking about, you know, all the other stuff they're funding, talking about defunding these facilities. And Representative Couture was so horrified by it, he started crying.
It's cruel. These residents couldn't come to our committee. I'm thankful that although my kids are disabled, that they weren't this gravely disabled. This isn't taxes. This isn't a budget. This isn't even a facility. This is human beings.
Yeah, Democrats heard that and they didn't care. They had their mind made up. Again, while they fund other things like laser hair removal for transgender inmates, they prioritize that. They cut funding to these facilities caring for wards of the state who have nowhere else to go. Nowhere else to go. So yesterday, there was an appropriations meeting where Democrats pushed this decision through. And, you know, what can Republicans do? They've already pushed back against it in previous committee hearings. Travis Couture shared his very personal story, literally in tears, trying to advocate for the people who rely on these facilities. And so Republicans decided, as Democrats voted to cut this funding, that they were just all going to walk out of the room. Here's that moment.
Mr. Chair, there are 17 ayes, 14 nays, and zero excused.
By your vote, Substitute Senate Bill 5393 is reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation. The next bill under consideration is 5785, Vice Chair Gregerson.
Yes, thank you. I move Substitute Senate Bill 5785 be reported out of
committee. Every single one of them walk out as they continue their business. And at the end of the day, Democrats are going to pass what Democrats are going to pass. They don't need a single Republican vote on that committee in order to do it. And so for Republicans to say, look, we've had this whole 4 months talking about all your priorities and the things that you want to fund and the things that you want to raise taxes for, $12 billion in new taxes to fund a whole bevy of things that are by no means life or death. And here we are as Republicans in the minority pleading with you in tears to keep this one thing that's literally keeping people alive. And you won't do it. So why are we even here? You know, usually I wouldn't support lawmakers walking out. You know, they have a duty to their constituents to speak up and to debate and push as hard as they can. But I think in that moment it was appropriate. And it just shows, you know, Democrats have no care or concern for the needs or the wants or the requests or the ideas of the minority party. And again, you know, elections have consequences. I do understand that. But when you look at those Republican lawmakers, they represent people. And even though Democrats are in the majority by a long shot, the districts that those Republicans represent still account for millions of Washingtonians who sent them there to do their business. And so for Democrats to repeatedly over and over shut out Republican voices, repeal 130-year-old rules so they can shut down Republican dissent, stop Republican speeches on the floor. It just shows how power-hungry they've become. And not once, never once, have they properly justified with all the other stuff they're spending money on. Never once have they properly justified why they would close down those two facilities for severely developmentally disabled adults rather than a couple constituents. We're angry that they are institutions. It's really sad stuff. So good for Republicans for doing that. I thought that that was an important stand to take. All right, one other bill that we're waiting on Bob Ferguson to sign. No doubt he's going to sign it. It's just a matter of when. And I think he'll make a big to-do out of it. I mean, when Bob Ferguson was the attorney general, what was his primary issue besides TDS? gun control. He was the one who was pushing all the gun control laws to legislators for them to pass. And now he's the one who's going to sign them. So no reason in the world that Bob Ferguson would veto House Bill 1163, which is, of course, the permit to purchase a firearm. One of the most wrongheaded, dumbfounding bills you can think of will make you, have to wait an insane amount of time to be able to get a firearm and exercise your Second Amendment rights. But then you have to actually take like live fire training, which will cost a lot of money. And there's no carve out for people who are poor and maybe can't afford to pay for live fire training. So now they just can't exercise their Second Amendment rights at all. I mean, the goal is, like so many of their gun control bills, the goal is to make it cost prohibitive and exhausting to own a firearm. Really. And I do think it's, I'm really tin hatting here, but I really do think it's part of their plan to cause so much chaos on the streets that you just hand over more money and control to the government. Because, of course, none of these bills do anything to stop criminals from getting guns and using guns. And we know that Democrats already push bills to reduce punishments for actual criminals who use guns while they increase restrictions on law-abiding citizens who want to use guns. So that tells you everything you need to know. But I think the goal here is just like they want to, they can't repeal the Second Amendment on their own. So they want to dissuade gun ownership in any possible way they can. So what happens from here? A couple weeks ago, we had on Bill Kirk with Washington Gun Law, who joined us on the show. He's the expert on all this. I highly recommend, if you're interested in 2A issues, following Bill Kirk on YouTube and X. And we talked a little bit about what the permit to purchase bill actually does and then sort of where it will go here in terms of a legal challenge.
So everyone needs to understand right now that if you just go in and you buy a firearm without a permit to purchase, you're waiting 10 days anyway. Understand, in addition to that 10-day waiting period, now you're going to have to sign up for a class. You're going to have to go through live fire training. I don't know how a person goes through live fire training when, in fact, they don't have a firearm to actually use in live fire training. And so if you accomplish all of those goals and you can afford all of it, now we probably have added at least 3 to 5 weeks to the process. Then you go to get the firearm, you add another 10 days on top of that. So you're talking about people who might take up to 2 months, if everything goes really, really well, to be able to actually arm themselves.
I mean, I don't see how that's constitutional. Is this one where you're pretty confident it'll be struck down? It's just going to be another kind of matter of time thing?
Well, that's a tough question. If we're going to rely on the state Supreme Court and things like that, no, it will not be struck down at all. Is there a possibility that we're going to begin to see a lot more of this type of litigation on a federal level? Yes, I do believe this is one of the next battlefronts in the Second Amendment battle, if you would. And so I think perhaps the Supreme Court could weigh in on that, but that's going to be a ways down the road.
Yeah. In the meantime, people who want guns who can't get them here are just going to go to Idaho and get them. In fact, on Sunday's show, this past week on Sundays with Subscribers, we had on our friend Brian, who used to work at a gun shop in Washington State, moved to Idaho, opened a gun shop there, and his personal and career lives have never been better. And he talked to us about, you know, all the people from Washington going over there to purchase firearms or firearm parts when it's legally allowed for them to do so. And it's just an interesting sort of dichotomy. So this is going to be a multi-year, I think it's 2020, ooh, I'm not going to have it here in front of me. Did he say it there? 2027, 2026? I think it's 2026 that the law actually goes into effect, although he's very skeptical they'll be able to get all the infrastructure in place they need in order to do it by then. So one of the things I would say is go buy a gun now. If you're thinking about it, go buy a gun now so that you don't have to get caught up in this whole process. So we will be, of course, tracking this one, and it's going to be as soon as it's signed, expect a lawsuit that fast. Do you have an answer for me?
I think it's not till 2027, May 2027 now. It
got delayed. Oh, did they push somehow. It again? Okay, yeah. I think it was like end of 2026. So yeah. We'll see. So you've got some time, and then we'll see what happens with the court challenge and all of that. Just nuts, nuts, nuts out of Olympia. Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Session's done technically on Sunday. So I would anticipate having a better idea of the budget situation probably Friday into Saturday, and they're going to turn around, vote on it on Sunday, and then, you know, be out of Olympia and not taking accountability for the billions of new taxes that they push through. So we'll be watching it. All right, we've got a double dose of unbelievable coming up next, including some masturbation talk. I'm just going to warn you up front. Is there a nicer way to say masturbation?
I don't know that was much of a warning.
You're right.
Is that for the kiddos in the car?
Sorry, moms. There's going to be some talk of public pleasuring in a moment. So if you need to Give them the old headphone treatment. Go ahead. First, our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com. Speaking of people moving to Idaho over dumb laws, he said that he's seen another uptick. There was an uptick for Wes Jones, a great real estate agent in our area, like around the pandemic when people were just moving out of state en masse, and then it sort of stopped for a little bit. And he said it's back on the upswing right now. So if you're one of them, I don't want you to leave. But if you're thinking about it, I guess reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Is Wes going to be upset that I started his ad with talk of masturbation?
Well, I'm just glad when you said speaking of, you went to the gun talk. Oh, God.
Okay. All right. I'm just really failing. All of our advertisers are going to pull out of our show. We're not going to have any left. But Wes has been doing this for a long time. He's been through the market ups and downs, and he knows his stuff. He's going to be able to talk you through how to properly price your home, because there is a lot of strategy involved in that. And then one of his favorite things is just coming to your house, giving it a good look over, and making sure that what needs to be done to your home so it gets top dollar is done, even if it means that you don't pay for it until closing. So cosmetic upgrades, that's part of the stressful part of selling your home. You're like, oh my God, now I moved all my furniture out and I see how rough shape my walls or whatever it is are in. Well, Wes and his team can come in there through their Listing Boost concierge service, get it in tip-top shape, and then you don't have to pay for that stuff till closing. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, I warned you. Let's talk about public pleasuring in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, I'm doing a double dose of Unbelievable today because this one's like a quick segment. It's going to last like 30 seconds. King 5 News sent out a hilarious post on X, immediately got dragged for it, and then ended up deleting it. Here's what they put out. So it says, neighbors demand Seattle action after out-of-control public masturbation at Denny Blaine Park. And the comments did not disappoint. There was one guy, is there a point at which public masturbation is under control? Is there our follower Beth Dutton, at one Beth Dutton? No, not the real Beth Dutton, but someone who uses the name Beth Dutton. I wonder what a normal level of masturbation is in Seattle parks. Is there an acceptable level? King 5 again deleted that. I don't blame them for that. I love that. I wonder what a normal level of masturbation is in Seattle parks. What constitutes out of control? To me, just one person is out of control.
I believe that, but I do know that that's a thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've known a couple people that have witnessed similar things. And so, yeah, no, I think maybe you could say that it's out of control.
Has it ever been in control?
But I don't know if it's ever been in control.
Or it's in control. I do, though, give, and it's usually homeless people who do this, I'd rather them do it at a park than under a blanket on 3rd and Pine. Because we don't know. We always see videos of that.
Kids in the park.
Yeah, but all I'm saying is we always see videos of somebody with a blanket over them, and you just see the telltale motion, motion of the ocean. And it's like right in the middle of 3 Pine by Pipe Place where all the tourists are. So, yeah. Out of control public masturbation. Got it, King 5. Thank you very much. All right. With that, we'll get to our second edition of Unbelievable. What are you going to do? Guess you got to do it somewhere. People have needs, Nicole. People have needs. There Not everyone has a house. This story is insane. The best way for me to characterize this saga I'm going to take you through. The Seattle Times basically did a story, wrote an entire story based on made up shit and conjecture to guilt people into donating money to Seattle Pride while ignoring the very obvious key reasons why Seattle Pride is in need of more money, and also used it as a way to just take a couple cheap shots at Donald Trump. This whole thing is insane to me. And for those of you who've been fans of the show for a long time, you'll remember we covered some of this way back in 2022, even before Nicole was here. So the Seattle Times comes out with this story. Here's a headline. Amid DEI rollback, Seattle Pride events see corporate sponsors pull back. And this, once the Seattle Times does it, now everybody else is picking it up. Oh my God, Seattle Pride. They're down hundreds of thousands of dollars for this year's Pride Parade, and it's because of the DEI rollback, and corporate sponsors are taking their money away. And that's what that headline says to you, right? Amid DEI rollback, Seattle Pride events see corporate sponsors pull back. If you're reading that, you would be led to believe that there must be a direct nexus between corporate sponsors not giving money to Seattle Pride and the federal efforts to roll back DEI. So let's see what they have to provide us to prove that. So I'm going to read quite a bit of this to you today because it really is that unhinged. Seattle Pride and other LGBTQ plus groups in the city have lost significant funding as corporate sponsors, including some that have backed celebrations for years, have scaled back their financial support. Seattle Pride, which organizes the annual Seattle Pride Parade downtown and Seattle Pride in the Park at Volunteer Park, is projecting a $350,000 budget shortfall this year because of the loss of corporate sponsorships. That amounts to nearly a quarter of the organization's annual operating budget, said Executive Director Patty Hearn. Hearn said the retreat in financial commitments by major corporate sponsors is a sign big-name companies may be following the lead of the Trump administration, which has launched a sweeping campaign against diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts and the LGBTQ plus community, particularly transgender people. Hearn said, it's a really rough world for queer people. And this just feels like it's part of that package. So the Seattle Times, in a news story, is quoting the executive director, Patty Hearn, as saying that this pullback of corporate sponsorship of Pride events is a sign big name companies may be following the lead of the Trump administration. And then she says it's a really rough world for queer people. That is the extent of any sort of evidence that they offer in this article that Trump's efforts to roll back DEI or to keep boys out of girls' sports is tied to Seattle Pride losing money. Is just the Seattle Times saying it may be. And the head of Seattle Pride saying it's a really rough world for queer people. So no evidence whatsoever. No corporation coming out and saying, we used to donate money to Seattle Pride. We're not now because Donald Trump. Not one. Nobody's saying it. There's no evidence of it. Nothing. That didn't stop Attorney General Nick Brown from sharing the article and offering his thoughts on it. Nick Brown came out and said, DEI is legal in Washington and the country. Trump's authoritarianism may have a chilling effect on businesses, but that's no excuse for ditching what's right. Again, that's the Attorney General of the state of Washington making an unfounded claim with no evidence to back it up whatsoever that Trump's actions are having a chilling effect on businesses. And so businesses are not doing what's right in giving money to Seattle Pride as if the businesses have some sort of obligation to give money to Seattle Pride. And if they're not, it must be because of Donald Trump. So the Seattle Times frames a story based on just, like I said, completely made up stuff, conjecture, while ignoring a recent, much more obvious reason why Seattle Pride's corporate sponsorship might be down. In 2022, when Seattle Pride came back after a few years off because of the pandemic, they decided in a very public manner that they were going to take a harder line with some of their corporate sponsors. At the time, the executive director was a woman named Crystal Marx, who's kind of a socialist type far left lunatic who's got her hands in all sorts of things. So she takes over as executive director and she makes a point of coming out and basically saying, we're not going to accept money from corporations who have supported candidates or politicians we don't agree with. And one of the corporations they shamed publicly at the time was Amazon, who had been one of the biggest corporate sponsors of Seattle Pride. So this is a post from April 7th of 2022. From Crystal Marx, again, who at the time, who at the time was the executive director of Seattle Pride. And she said that they were evaluating at the time all of our corporate partners with an emphasis on presenting higher level partners to ensure they are of the highest caliber and actively support and do not harm our community. She said through this evaluation process, Seattle Pride has decided not to partner with Amazon for the 2022 Seattle Pride Parade because of their financial donations to politicians who actively propose and support anti-LGBTQIA+ legislation. And it wasn't just the statement. Crystal Marx did a full round of media, proactively, even national media, talking about the fact and sharing publicly the fact that Amazon had come to them and wanted to be that year their presenting partner for the first year Seattle Pride was going to be back. And they were offering Seattle Pride $100,000 to be the presenting sponsor of the parade that year. And behind Amazon's back, they colluded and decided, let's reject this money and put Amazon on blast publicly and in the news. So they rejected the $100,000 from Amazon. And one of the reasons was a couple small donations that Amazon had made to Republican politicians in Washington state. And one of those politicians, a Republican, had been a co-sponsor on a bill that Seattle Pride thought was so anti-transgender, anti-LGBTQ, it was simply unacceptable for Amazon to have supported this politician. What did the bill do? The bill said biological men shouldn't be allowed to be housed in women's prisons with women, which is so bad and horrible and anti-transgender that Seattle Pride would turn down $100,000 from Amazon over one bill, one politician co-sponsored that Amazon gave a little bit of money to. Which, by the way, it's actually a very sane bill to say, yeah, biological men, including rapists and murderers, shouldn't be able to say, hey, I'm a woman, and then be put in a cell with a woman for years on end. It's kind of weird. It's kind of sick to think that they should, honestly. So don't you think, if you're evaluating, it gets better, don't worry. If you're evaluating why Seattle Pride has had such a massive drop in corporate sponsors to the tune of around $350,000 a year, that rather than just hinting or suggesting maybe it could be Donald Trump in some form or fashion, we have no evidence of it, wouldn't you at least mention the fact that Seattle Pride has a history of publicly shaming corporate sponsors who do not align with their politics? Because if I was a corporation and they were going to do that to me like Amazon, we offered you $100,000 and you publicly shamed us, yeah, we're not giving you any more money. Don't you think that's a much better explanation for what's going on here? Or at least an explanation that's worthy of the Seattle Times, a news organization, including their reporting? I think so. Let's read on, shall we? The Seattle Times goes on to say, but the retreat from DEI initiatives may not fully explain why some companies have decided to step away from sponsoring Pride events. So I read that sentence. So I was like, okay, here they're going to get to something that makes sense. And I love how they say the retreat from DEI initiatives may not fully explain. You haven't even proven that it partially explains or explains at all what's happening here. You just made that up. So then Egan Orion, who's part of the Seattle Pride organization now, he's talking to them here. And the Seattle Times writes, some businesses, especially smaller local ones, say they have pulled back because of limited budgets amid fears of a recession driven by the Trump administration's tariff policy. Meanwhile, some corporate sponsors like Alaska Airlines have agreed to continue financially supporting Seattle Pride this year. So again, wrap your mind around this. They're saying it might not just be DEI initiatives. Some small businesses aren't supporting because they're so fearful of the economic outlook and a recession driven by Donald Trump. Gee, is there something else closer to home that could explain why businesses are a little bit worried about the bottom line right now? I know there's something, I might be forgetting it. Oh, could it be the $12 billion in new taxes that Democrats are passing in Olympia? Most of which is our taxes on businesses. Could that be it? No mention of that either. So here they're talking about how, oh, Trump recession tariffs, might have businesses rethinking where they spend their money and whether they give money to Seattle Pride, with no mention of the fact that maybe businesses are also feeling a little bit of a pinch because there's a $5 billion increase in the B&O tax coming down the pipeline. Some of them are going to be required to prepay their taxes to the state to help the state fill its budget deficit. And they just increased the capital gains tax. That also could have a little bit to do with the financial strain, right? But that doesn't fit into the Trump orange man bad narrative. All right, let's keep reading here. Seattle Pride Fest had considered scaling back this year's events because of the shortfall, Orion said, but ultimately decided it ran counter to the celebration theme of more rainbow. That's the theme of the Pride Parade this year. More rainbow, which has been a, quote, guiding force for organizers. The group had planned for expanded programming this year, he said, and will continue to push ahead despite the funding challenges. He said there are folks out there that would like the LGBTQ plus IA plus minus community to go away and go back into the closet. And we're not interested in that. We think more color, more diversity, bigger and better events for the community is what's needed at this moment. So we thought about scaling back because we're down $350,000. But we can't do that because the theme of the parade is more rainbow, and some of these hate-filled Trump fear-mongerer anti-DEI, anti-LGBTQIA+, anti-transgender people might want us to go back into the closet, but we're taking a stand and we're not doing that. What does that say to you? This whole article, this is a grift to guilt people into giving them more money. It's a grift to guilt people, and they even mention a GoFundMe in there. And I guarantee that their fundraising after this article in a city like Seattle is going to shoot through the roof. So they publicly shame, name and shame sponsors for not aligning perfectly with their political preferences. They even turn down money. Then they come out and complain, oh my gosh, because of Donald Trump and his hate towards transgender people and DEI, we've lost all these corporate sponsorships. Corporations are so bad and evil. Will you help us, please? Because we don't want gay people to feel like they have to go back in the closet. It's a very tough time for gay people. Here's a GoFundMe link. It's the most transparent thing I've ever seen. And made even more transparent if you read the editor's note at the bottom of the Seattle Times article, which says this. Editor's note, the Seattle Times is sponsoring Seattle Pride as a media partner this year. Okay, now I get it. So the Seattle Times was more than happy to shame corporations, unnamed corporations, for not donating to Seattle Pride, because then at the end, the Seattle Times could say, but we're righteous, and we're still donating and supporting to Seattle Pride because we like gay people, unlike Orange Man Bad, Donald Trump. This is the lot of bangers from the Times. This is the craziest Seattle Times article I've ever seen. They are not a serious news organization. Cancel your subscriptions. And look, I have gone to Seattle Pride for many years. Not the last couple years, because honestly, it got a little too sexualized for me, and I don't need to see other people's junk out in public and kids around. It's weird to me. And I used to love Seattle Pride. I think it's a fun event. And then they started hating on cops. And then they were like, cops can't march in the parade. Cops, we don't even want cops in uniform around. Cops bad in 2020. That was sort of like, okay, so you're very welcoming and yay, all love. And you won't let cops there, even cops that are gay that wanted to march in the parade. So they kind of tell on themselves there, right? Oh, they accuse everyone else of hate. And then they're like one of the most hateful entities around. Oh, and you donated to a Republican, even though there's gay Republicans. There's literally a group of gay Republicans. It's called the Log Cabin Republicans. So they want to celebrate diversity in the LGBTQIA+ community. As long as you're not a cop and as long as you're not a Republican, you're welcome there. And they want to shame corporate sponsors, complain when corporate sponsors stop giving them money, and then get the Seattle Times on board to twist it into a story about how all of it is Donald Trump's fault. And I guarantee in 2 weeks, they'll have an article out that the public made up for the fundraising gap. And now this year's Pride Fest is going to be bigger and better than ever because people are suckers. People are suckers for a good narrative driven by TDS. Insane. I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll today, on Patreon Locals and X about this, because we're about to be inundated, of course, with Pride-related things. Do you typically attend or support any sort of Pride Month activities? Nicole, yay or nay?
I do not. I mean, are not you, that I'm, well, I'm
a homophobic?
I'm against what it's become. Not that I cared in the beginning, but now it's become this weird, hateful thing that you're describing, so...
It really has. It's like the second you're like, cops can't come. Okay, so this isn't about love and acceptance then.
No.
Gotcha. Okay. Republicans can't come. Okay. All right. Gotcha. It's like, why would you go? I'm actually surprised, though. I thought that the poll would be a little more even, Steven. Like 98% of people are saying they don't go to any Pride events.
You thought it was going to be even?
Oh, no, no. I said a little more even, Steven.
I don't know. I figured it was going to be pretty lopsided like that.
Yeah. I'm wondering if we have any gay viewers who... used to go and don't go anymore for political reasons. Ricky, we have a relatively new and calm Pride Festival in our city that I've attended to date and will likely again this year. Billy Grock says the phrase "Pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall" warns that arrogance and excessive pride can lead to one's downfall. It emphasizes the importance of humility and the dangers of overestimating oneself. I agree. But I think part of that's an interesting, I don't know, like that quote from Grock where it's from, but it is this interesting of like the goal of Pride was acceptance, right? Mm-hmm. And to celebrate, and I'm, you know, like we're around gay marriage and all of that. It was acceptance.
I think it was, and so you don't feel alone if right. That's you, right? So then you don't feel alone. You don't feel like you're alone in this world, yeah. I guess.
And then it became about, first of all, there's kind of two tracks it went on. Mm-hmm. Then it's like roping in all these other groups that really had nothing to do with the core mission of Pride. I mean, I don't understand how, like, gender dysphoria has anything to do with Pride or gay rights. It's not the same thing. Mm-hmm. And then you get the people who are out in the Pride festivals, like whips, chains, handcuffs, getting spanked on a float. Right. And I'm like, okay, if you wanted acceptance, I'm not really sure a public display like that is... Like, you don't see straight people who are into, like... What's something a straight sexual...
I don't know.
Well, they might... Bondage, yeah, bondage. Yeah, bondage. I mean, you straight people are into the same sexual, like... There are straight people who do bondage, too. See, you didn't think we're getting to bondage. There's straight people, you know, swingers or whatever it is. You don't see them having parades on floats like whips and chains out in public. So it's like the goal was acceptance. And then you veered off and it was like kept adding letters and things to it. And it was like demand. We demand you accept that I dress as a furry. And it's like, nah, it's... No, thanks. You know, it's like, what is that?
I mean, I think that's part of this battle too. So in the beginning when it was when there was a group that was for gay rights and they were battling, you know, laws and things like that to get more gay rights. Yeah. There was this big it's like feed the cause. Right. So they were fundraising. There's jobs. It's just like any of these. You know, homelessness industrial complex. Yep. It's all of these corporate or like big groups that get together. And then once they accomplish their mission, it's like, well, what's next? And so that's why you see all these extra letters being added. So then, oh, well, I guess we got gay rights. So now let's like work on trans. And so we keep getting the money. We keep funding the beast to continue this. Otherwise, there would be nothing to fund.
And then you use the successful Pride movement and they co-opt it to prop up much more fringe things. Like you said, you know, Target went from, oh, Pride t-shirt to having in front displays bathing suits that had a label on it that said you could tuck. You could use the suit to tuck. You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, you took things too far. And I do think kind of Pride cometh before the fall.
I will say that GoFundMe, actually, I mean, because that article came out, I feel like kind of early yesterday, and there's been some talk of this the last couple of days, and I did see it on a couple different news programs, and it's only at about 10,000, and one of that is a $5,000 donation.
What's their goal?
75,000.
When did the $5,000 donation, when was that made?
I can't see the time. 2 days ago, or that was made 17 hours ago, but this has started for 4 days, or this has started 4 days ago.
So mark my words, it'll go through the roof.
I'm
and then
sure
there'll be corporate sponsors
out.
Who make a big deal out of, oh, I'm signing on because we don't tolerate hate and Donald Trump. And it's like, you just got bamboozled.
Well, you that just and got they bamboozled. Want the marketing. Like, oh, then they can like, you know, display that.
Yeah. Country guy says, I'm a gay viewer and I never do. And I shouldn't have put it that way. You're a viewer who happens to be gay. But he says he never goes to Pride stuff. A couple more on the do you go to Pride stuff. Sharon, we were in Glasgow last year and I ran into their Pride March. It was just a nice, normal folks in t-shirts and with a few rainbow flags, all very respectful, low-key, family friendly. If ours were like that, I'd consider it, but some of the images I've seen are definitely not something I'd want to see. Maybe they just don't have the weather for all the naked stuff in Scotland. Jonathan Cho got, we'll move on to national in a second, but Jonathan Cho got banned from YouTube for, he posted two videos. One of them was a homeless guy taking a dump. And he blurred out, but they're still like this. He's like, but this is happening in public in downtown Seattle. It was part of a news coverage.
That actually, I was in LA last week and
common scene.
Same thing.
Yep. Common scene. The other one was he had a video of men at Pride naked with their ding-a-lings out. It's our last show of the week. We're off the rails today. And then he's kind of panning over and there's children and then he's panning to like the obscene stuff. So he posts that and he even blurred the ding-a-lings and he got his YouTube account got nuked. He got it back now.
Took a while though.
But it took like a year.
Mm-hmm.
So that just shows like if it's not suitable for YouTube, it's probably not suitable for children.
For the children that are sitting right next to them.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Too Ugh. Good. What a fun
Society,
show
today. Society, man.
Society, yeah. What Seattle a mess. Pride. Oh, woe is you. Yeah, no. And if you're one of those corporate sponsors who got shamed by Pride and are no longer giving them money, consider being one of our corporate sponsors. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. Send us a message. We won't shame you over your political beliefs. All right. We'll get to national coming up next. The Trump administration trying to reinstitute reasonable discipline in our schools. So it's not a free for all. I'm curious what you guys think about that. I've told you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. It's pretty simple. You go to firstmarkinsurance.com, schedule time to take the First Mark Challenge. There's kind of three steps to it. You get your insurance stuff gathered. So whatever your insurance policies are existing, get them together. Schedule the time with First Mark. They'll go over those. You talk to them about, you know, maybe any changes you have coming up. Maybe you're thinking about, I know for Mike and I, you know, when we got married, you're thinking about ring insurance and life insurance and stuff that just pops up that, oh, now all of a sudden I need insurance for this. So First Mark is going to walk you through all of that. They're going to go out. They're going to shop their market of carriers for you that they've been working with for years. They're going to come back and they're going to give you your recommendations. And it's just that simple. Their recommendation might be, you know what? Your insurance you have right now is great. We actually can't do any better for you. Or they could save you hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a year. Michelle says that they saved her 50%. And now her and her husband can continue their discussions about getting a travel trailer. So thousands of dollars a year. Chad says they saved him over $100 a month. So more than $1,200 a year. That's not chump change. And I just get endless. We get messages from people all the time who had a wonderful experience with First Mark, even if they didn't ultimately end up using First Mark for their insurance needs. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. All right, in national news, before we get to Florida report, so President Donald Trump says that they want to reinstate common sense school discipline policies. And this is an issue that's popped up here in Washington state as well, where it's like, no one can do anything wrong. No one can fail. No kid that shows up gets an F. And it's like, okay, but what if they're not doing their homework? And so you just have these lax policies in, you know, I think in came about the racial justice movement and it just went into all like math is racist, 2 + 2 is actually 5 if a kid thinks it is. So the disciplinary stuff kind of goes hand in hand with that, where you have schools that tend to kind of look the other way. And there were concerns about disciplinary outcomes, where it was like a disproportionate amount of discipline was, you know, for young Black men. And they didn't really look at, as much as people will call me racist for this, they didn't look at, well, okay, is that because a disproportionate number of young Black men are acting up at school? Or is it because a disproportionate teachers are disproportionately taking their behavior more seriously than white students? There was no indication of that. And if it is that there actually is a disproportionate number of young Black men who are acting up at school, let's get to the root cause of that problem and fix it. Let's not just look the other way in the interest of equity. That makes no sense at all. So that seems to be what the White House is trying to fix. In an executive order on this, the Trump administration says the federal government will no longer tolerate known risks to children's safety and well-being in the classroom that result from the application of school discipline based on discriminatory and unlawful equity ideology. It goes on to give some history for all of this. In 2014, the Department of Education and the Department of Justice jointly issued a Dear Colleague letter regarding school discipline. The letter effectively required schools to discriminate on the basis of race by imposing discipline based on racial characteristics rather than on objective behavior alone. The consequences harmed students in schools. So here is the executive order. Within 30 days of the date of this order, the Secretary of Education, in consultation with the Attorney General, shall issue new guidance to local educational agencies and state educational agencies regarding school discipline and their obligations not to engage in racial discrimination under Title VI. Did I read that correct? Title VI in all contexts, including social discipline. So I like that, but the question is this going to be another one of the federal government says, don't do this, and our schools just look the other way? Because they've done that on DEI. They've done that on transgender participation in school sports, and they've dug their heels in, and what consequences have there been? So the Trump administration can put out all these feel-good executive orders that we like in principle, but if they have no teeth, what's the point, frankly? Is the point just to be seen signing it and to make a statement in that regard? And yeah, I will be critical of them on this because we haven't seen, like, it's like they're just choosing random states to actually enforce it, like Maine. It's like, okay, if you put this out to all schools and you said, eliminate DEI or else, don't let boys participate against girls or else, when does the or else happen? And is this going to be the same thing? Stop, you know, putting down discipline because of a kid's skin color or else. So in a year, are we going to be still talking about the or else and when it's coming? So I like this, but I want to see some action on these things that's a little bit more aggressive, frankly. All right, it's Thursday, so that means it's time for our segment, Florida Report. Today, we're going to talk in depth about a scandal that Governor Ron DeSantis is involved in. And yes, it does seem like there's actually some stuff here to be concerned about. So it is our segment with my sister, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
A little controversy brewing with Ron DeSantis, and usually I dismiss it as people getting all spun up, but in this case, some Republicans are mad about it as well, and it does seem like there's some there because there's been kind of some apologies and acknowledgments that this wasn't handled well. So to set this up, and I'm going to have you take us into kind of the connection to DeSantis's wife, et cetera. So there was, and we talked about this previously on the show, there was this big settlement from the state's largest Medicaid contractor, Centene. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. So there was wrongdoing. They settled with the state. And as part of the settlement, there was a donation to an organization that has ties to Ron DeSantis's wife, correct?
Correct. Hope Florida we talked about Hope Florida a few years ago on the podcast. This was a foundation they put in place in an effort to kind of take, like offer a hand up instead of a hand out. So it's basically a foundation that offers families in need connections to outside sources for help, like churches, charitable organizations, businesses, et cetera. It is a government organization, but it's basically bridging the gap to help people like get off government assistance and find help elsewhere as well. And this is this was founded by Casey DeSantis, Ron's wife.
Yeah, and just to kind of clarify the distinction here when we talk about these. So Casey DeSantis launched Hope Florida, and then there's the Hope Florida Foundation that sort of supports its efforts. So the donation in question, or the part of the settlement we're talking about, went to the Hope Florida Foundation. And so that's the sort of tie there. But then this money went from the foundation to some very blatantly political efforts.
Yeah, almost instantly when the foundation received that $10 million, they sent $5 million of it to Secure Florida Future and $5 million to save our society from drugs. Those are two separate organizations. And then those two organizations then sent that money to another organization, which is an organization that was run by, at the time, DeSantis' chief of staff, who's now our attorney general. And then that organization then sent it to two other political action committees, the Florida GOP and also Ron DeSantis' Florida Freedom Fund. And both, you know, those were based, the accusation is that money was then used to fight against Amendment 3 during last year's election, the legalization of recreational marijuana.
Which DeSantis opposed. So,
which vehemently DeSantis opposed, yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure who did the work untangling this web. I've been reading through some in-depth sort of explanations. But there is a clear sort of, you can follow the money. So it goes to the Hope Florida Foundation, then it splits off into these other entities that end up giving it to political groups. Some of the money is used to oppose that initiative, which DeSantis also opposed. So, you know, it's a small fraction of the overall settlement that's involved in sort of, you know, political stuff, but it still looks really bad.
It does. I mean, it's taxpayer money. That money, the whole settlement was $67 million, and $57 million of that went back to where it should go to be, you know, reused in different ways. But making a $10 million donation within that settlement to this this organization, and then not even using those funds for what that organization is supposed to be using the funds that it does get for, is just kind of like an insult to injury on top of everything else.
Yeah, and so basically it was $67 million. The state had been overbilled for Medicaid. So the payment to the state for the settlement was $67 million. $10 million of it was funneled through the organization that's connected to Casey DeSantis. And then, of course, ends up in the hands of, like, the organization that's run by the governor's then chief of staff. And so you can see how it all just looks bad and is bad. So how is the governor reacting to it? Because he's been asked about it point blank.
Yes, he's been a little bit defensive, which yeah. I think he is, my opinion of him is he's always very, like, clear. He's very transparent in what he's trying to do. At least that's the impression I've always kind of got of him. So when he's getting these questions from media at press conferences and instantly jumping to the defense, saying that the, you know, House Republicans are colluding with liberal media and state Democrats to smear him, and it just is so out of character that I feel like it feels like his toes are being held to the fire, and he knows that. So there's going to be a few hearings coming up to try to get to the bottom of this. So I'm kind of curious if he will at any point kind of, you know, like roll over a little bit and accept defeat that maybe these funds were not handled appropriately.
Well, Matt Gaetz, I was reading in The Hill, so former Rep. Matt Gaetz of Florida, who's, you know, very aligned with DeSantis politically, he is calling for the Florida State House Republicans to actually impeach the now Attorney General, who used to be DeSantis's chief of staff, over handling of the money, the ties to him, the ties to the campaign to defeat legal weed. So, I mean, that's when it sucks, the sort of, oh, this is a politically motivated hit piece out of it. You've got Matt Gaetz saying there's something up here. You've got Republicans saying there's something up here. They have no reason to sort of plant things that would make DeSantis look bad or sort of like drum it up. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know the extent to which, you know, DeSantis like said, do this, send it here, all that. I mean, he could be, you know, in the clear about that, you know, part of the settlement and how it was negotiated. But I think you come out and you just say, like, look, yeah, this was mishandled. We're looking into it to make sure it never happens again. Obviously, we can't have money that was part of this settlement going to political committees tied to my wife or any sort of political, you know, efforts. And so, yeah, I mean, I think he's getting criticism that's worthy here.
For sure. And, you know, especially on the heels of him really being like, Doge this, Florida Doge that, money here, money there. You know, he found himself wrapped up in it, and that's got to kind of make him a little bit more like defensive about it. I don't think he really wants to like admit defeat when he's like the first one to call out people mishandling funds.
Yeah, he was critical of a House Republican who criticized not only DeSantis, but the now Attorney General. This is DeSantis's quote from last week. We have this almost 3-1 supermajority of Republicans in the Florida House of Representatives, and it is rotten. They are behaving more like Democrats. They're colluding with the left. They're colluding with the media to try to sabotage all the great success that Florida has had over these last 6 years. Okay, Ron, got it. Like, everyone's colluding against you, as opposed to this being a really poor handling of money from the settlement. cool. That's acting like a Democrat to me, you know, where it's like, it's everyone's fault except mine. So I hope there are some consequences for this so it doesn't happen again. But we'll keep tracking it, because I don't think this is one that DeSantis is going to be able to sort of distance himself from easily or quickly. So, all right, Miranda, well, we appreciate it. Thanks for the explainer.
Absolutely. Have a good weekend.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know that it's DeSantis' fault per se, but when you don't just fall on the sword and just you're the leader or whatever it is, when you don't just say, yeah, that doesn't look good, I just can't take you seriously. You see politicians on both sides do that all the time. But when something's obviously, even if it wasn't intentional or somebody else's oversight or whatever it is, just call it like it is. And the fact that you can't just makes it worse, and it prolongs the story. All right, coming up next, are we going to show the photos next of, I told you my husband got attacked by a sea lion in Cabo? We have the pictures today, the photo evidence, and we'll get to viewer comments. I'm lucky he's alive, frankly. I don't know how he lived through it. First, run your retirement portfolio through a Department of Retirement Efficiency with our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. Bulwark Capital specializes in managing risk. So given the volatility of the market right now, it's a great time to get a second opinion and to make sure that your hard-earned retirement is safe and it's properly being protected against unnecessary risk. Here's Zach.
I've had these several times where I've looked at a portfolio and said, look, I would do things differently, but I don't think this is a bad allocation, you know, and I'll tell them, I'll be honest with them. Other times I'll look at it and be like, look, this is ridiculous. You should be stressed out because whoever put this together for you doesn't know what they're doing. And then they're like, well, I did it. I'm like, well, I apologize. but you're also a machinist at Boeing, so don't take it bad, right?
Yeah, he said, I wouldn't fly on a plane that Zach made. So maybe don't do your own retirement portfolio if that's not your area of expertise. So good time to get a second opinion, especially if you're very concerned about the current market volatility or just risk and what you're exposed to. So if Zach can do that, it's totally free, no obligation. And you only get one retirement, so why not get a second opinion? Schedule your free risk review now, knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. All right. I teased I was going to show these photos, and then I just kind of forgot. Nicole kept reminding me. So we were in Cabo last week, right, on vacation. So a little bit of background. We went fishing. We caught like 9 Sierra, which I'd never heard of a Sierra fish, long and just mean looking mothers with teeth. Anyway, so we do that. We're coming back in. They've got this sea lion that was jumping up on the back of the boat. And there's always a sea lion there. There was a really one that had been there for a long time. And that's what he did every day, is just get bait from boats as they were coming back in. And he died. And now there's a new one. Big, big, fat sea lion. And he was jumping up, and he literally on the back of the boat, and our captain was throwing him fish and then letting us throw him fish. We gave this fat boy 5 or 6 fish. I'm talking like 6-7 inch fish.
He looks high.
he had kind of an issue with one of his eyes, which I think might have played into the attack that followed. So then we get to the dock and throw him another couple fish, and we're posing for a picture with the captain of the boat. And all of a sudden, and we have somebody taking the picture for us, all of a sudden, Mike cries out, my husband, that ungrateful sea lion came up and bit him right in the leg. And afterwards, so he's telling us this happened. He's like, oh my God, I just got bit. We got to get off the dock. A sea lion attacked me. And we're looking at the photos. We're like, oh, we wish we had gotten it in the picture, because one of the photo I saw, the sea lion was back in the water. And then I scrolled back a few photos. I'm like, oh my God, Carl, our friend Carl, who's taking the picture. You captured the moment of the bite. That thing could have dragged him into the water if he wanted to.
Look at his skin. That had some pressure.
So, well, Mike's skin, he did break skin. He bled a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, this thing had fangs. So if it wanted to take him in the water, it could have. Mike said, I think the little guy has bad vision. And the second he realized it wasn't a fish, he just spit it back out. But now my husband's going all around calling all his friends that he survived a sea lion attack. And he thinks he's the bravest man on the planet. It's like, I could have died. And I'm like, well, you could have technically. Anyway, I thought that was fun. And it's just, I want to create, what do you call it? Like, you know, those frames that have like four. So I want to do the sea lion feeding the little guy. And then the 3 photos of the bite and then the aftermath of the bite, and frame it for my husband. I do blame my friend Nancy, though, who's in that picture. Now, she denies that this happened the way I describe it. But we were throwing this guy a fish at the dock. Mm-hmm. And the guy gave her one to throw, and it was still alive. And it kind of was not the best throw, Nancy. Not the best throw. And it went to the water, and the sea lion dove after it and came back up and was like, huh, like all mad because the fish got away. And after that, the sea lion bit Mike. So I think because the fish got away, this was retribution. Anyway.
And I will say I put up that little smiley face over Mike's face because he was smiling at the point of this picture. Yeah. Because I think that it was captured just as the bite hit. And so he was smiling still in this picture. And
he hadn't quite realized it yet.
Further in the series of snap snaps.
Yeah, then he's reacting to it. But my husband doesn't love to be on any sort of social media or the show. So we just... I didn't ask my friend Nancy if she wanted to be, but there she is. All right, let's get to some comments. Wow, you guys are super chatting it up today. You just having a love fest with us? I'm not complaining. Baron of Gray Matter, $10 super chat. I was on an X space with Scott Pressler, Matt Brown, PNW folks last night, talked about ballot harvesting. There was an excess of 300,000 Republicans that didn't vote. WADGOP admits they're way behind. People need to volunteer. Yeah, and they haven't... You know, ballot harvesting is something that Republicans have sort of frowned upon. But it's like, okay, you might not like the practice, but it is allowed and Democrats are doing it. So if Democrats are doing it, you need to do it too. And I think that we could have gotten Jamie Hoorah Butler through in Lands Commissioner race had they been a little bit better at ballot harvesting. All right, let's see here. Samantha Olson, this is maddening. Something has to change. My business owner heart is broken. We can't afford to buy here either. Yeah, it's frustrating. And for anybody who's had to save up money for a down payment on a home, that's tough. You make sacrifices for a few years to put enough money away, and the fact that someone else just gets it gifted to them, that other homeowners have to pay for it, other home buyers have to pay for it, is ridiculous. And I would also say it's weird because those recorder fees apply to everyone. So you might be a Black home buyer who it's not your first home, and your family was actually discriminated against, but you don't qualify for the program and you have to pay added fees at closing so other people can get reparations. It's so weird. Mm-hmm. Casey, happy early birthday to Nicole, my birthday twin. Thanks for all you and Brandy do to keep us informed and entertained. P.S. Sunday is a great day for a steak dinner. Yeah, it's Nicole's birthday on Sunday. I'll save my happy birthday song for Monday. What are you going to do for your birthday?
Softball. I have softball. It's my first game of the year.
Don't get another shiner. I'm try like you not had a to couple get hit in the ago. Eye. Okay.
But yeah, and then maybe dinner. But yeah.
The
but
big 3-5.
I will say they're giving you a bad time about the steak dinner. I've been assigned to pick a day.
Yeah, that's not my fault.
But Daryl and I haven't been able to find a day.
Yeah, I'm going to buy them steak dinner for my failed bet about Joe Biden. And I told Nicole, find a day and give me a few options. So when they want to eat steak, I'll eat steak. But it's not my fault. Yep. Old Sub Sailor, $20 super chat. As I've said before, the Dems are doing this purposefully to tear apart the state, get rid of dissenters, and rebuild it into their socialist communist mecca. They care nothing for the hardworking people of this state. More and more I agree. I hate to lump them all in, but some of them have taken some very bad votes this session. Mm-hmm. Mary just renewed my subscription and I went a level higher this time. Thanks, Mary. Keep up the good work, Brandy and Nicole, and Undivided Team. That reminds me, for subscribers, I'm having a live Q&A Sunday night. So be on the lookout, Sunday night, 8 p.m. So be on the lookout for your alert for that. So we'll do a Q&A with subscribers live Sunday, 8 p.m. this week. All right, Bestie Rose, everything he signs, he expects it's his DOJ that needs to start suing these states. Are you talking about Trump? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know. Maybe it is the DOJ. Maybe it's Pam Bondi. I'm not saying Donald Trump doesn't actually want these executive orders to mean something, but you got to be honest. Like, if you're going to do it, let's get it done.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that slam that the main governor had in the, like, in his face, that got extra attention.
Or she said, see you in court.
Right, so that got a little extra motivation. Mm-hmm. But for sure, I mean, I think that probably part of the holdup is all of these stinking lawsuits over absolutely everything he does.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's part of the holdup. But let's get to it, because even just short term, that would be great. Just make them think about how serious we are about this.
Well, and you're emboldening our state to think, see, he doesn't mean it. They're just going to keep doubling, tripling down. You're buying them time to find ways to work around it and call DEI other things or whatever it is. And for those women who are competing against men, they'll never get those races back. Every time we're in track season, all that happens. They're never going to get those races back. So let's see. Ingrid, lots of gay friends don't go anymore, mortified by the lewd costumes and lack of clothing and children looking on. Yeah,
it's true. It's like, it is true. For the people that are just living their lives and happen to be gay and used to go to a parade because they were around friends. Now it's got disturbing. It's been taken over by crazies.
Right. I mean, when I used to go, like, and I had, you know, gay friends who I would go with, and it was we had a ton of fun.
Yeah.
And we'd go down to the parade. And I mean, I was in my 20s at the time. We'd drink quite a bit and we'd go up to Capitol Hill and all that stuff. And then I think as you get older, not only is that just an exhausting prospect, no matter what you're celebrating, I'm like, I'm not going out on Capitol Hill. I don't have that kind of energy. Although there are some gay bars I'd go to where people loved me. I was so used to the far left in Seattle, like, oh, you're a Nazi. And then I'd go into the gay bars where the older gays hung out. And they're like, we love you, Brandy. I'm like, what a nice welcome. That was unexpected. So maybe I should go back. Roger, we purchased a home out of state, a very red and common sense state. This state can have Ferguson, gay pride, indoctrinating 5 to 6 year olds into the idea that there are multiple genders and that they can be any gender they want. What a screwed up bunch of worthless voters and politicians. Welcome to our show, Undivided. We were born and raised here and have been fighting these battles for years. However, you just can't fix stupid. I don't want you to leave, Roger, but I understand that. There's also for businesses. There's only so much you're willing to absorb. And what are you getting in return? I talked about it with our show. I pay 4 figures in taxes to the state of Washington. I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but we are a podcast. Not like we're making money hand over fist. And to me, that's insane because what does the state give me for that those taxes? You know, I don't have like sidewalks out front that are being maintained for customers to come in or something like that. The state literally gives our business nothing in return for the taxes we pay. We're just paying taxes for the pleasure of doing a podcast while existing in the state of Washington. And it drives me nuts. But I got to pay those dang taxes because I'm sure Bob Ferguson and his buddies would love to find out if I was skirting my tax bill and they'd come after me for that. So I was still, when I first hired my accountant, I'm like, Tristan, everything by the books because they're going to be looking for any little problem. So, yeah, it's depressing, but we got to do it. All right. Okay, I think that's it. You know what? I think that's it. Kenny Hawkins, I'm a gay man who used to go, and now it's not gay pride, it's trans pride. No place for a gay man unless you agree with all the ideology. Mm-hmm. Sad. Yeah, that is absolutely sad. Okay, and with that, let's get to our closing. Thank you, Nicole. Let's get to our happy birthday. Let's get to our closing sanity check. Man, I love some Tom Homan. Speaking of somebody who's getting it done and not just saying the nice things that need to be done, but he's out there doing the work. So, of course, there continues to be this controversy over this one alleged MS-13 gang member who was deported and that Democrats really want to come back home for what? I don't know why. But Tom Homan on Fox News absolutely revealed what Democrats are so spun up about, really.
Here's what they're doing, though. Here's the plan. The Biden administration overwhelmed the system. 10.5 million people came to the border. They know it's going to take years to get through the court docket. By then, they're hoping there's another Democratic administration in. They'll have U.S. citizen children. Then all of a sudden, nobody wants them removed. We're spoiling their plans to have future Democratic voters and through a census, have control of the House. Through a census vote, Democratic sanctuary cities get more seats in the House. This is their plan. That's why they overwhelmed the system. That's why they didn't detain them. When they detain them, they get a hearing in 35 days. They released them. Now it's going to take 5 to 7 years. They're going to keep playing this game through the immigration courts, through appeal after appeal after appeal, district judge, to slow us down because their hopes is they'll gain power again, then they can warrant amnesty to 10 million illegal aliens that are released in this country illegally. That is their plan. We're trying to remove these public safety threats and national security threats as quick as possible. They're putting every roadblock imaginable in front of us to prevent us from doing that.
Yep, and that's also why blue states are the states that don't have voter ID. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been not only today's episode of Undivided, but this week's episodes of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. For subscribers, we'll have a new episode of Sundays with Subscribers talking about a new documentary that's out looking at Washington State's climate grift and how much money it's actually costing you. So we'll be discussing that on Sundays with Subscribers Sunday morning. And then at 8 p.m. on Sunday evening, we will have our monthly live Q&A where you can ask me anything your heart desires, truly anything. Nicole's birthday will be on Sunday. She's turning 35.
Exactly.
No, you should tell people how old you are because you look damn good. Oh, Nicole looks so young.
40. I am 44. I think
you're 44 and you look younger than me. And I'm 30. How old am I? 36. 36. So whatever the skincare routine is going on over there, it's working. It's working good.
Thanks, man.
That's it, you guys. Subscribe to the show, okay? UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com.